Welcome to What the Hex, your source for Warhammer Underworlds. I'm Davey.
I'm Phil.
And I'm Aaron.
Today we're going to be talking about random ploys, which is to say 50-50 ploys. We used to call them 50-50s like early on in Shadespire. Just everyone did it. That's how they were. You know, really cool. But no one didn't call them that, in fact. Right, yeah. We laughed at those who thought about not doing it. But in fact, now there are some that are not 50-50. But we're going to cover more of that in a little bit. We're coming to you shortly after the latest update to the banned and restricted list. There is now Extreme Flank banned and some cards added to the restricted. That's not what we're going to touch on a whole bunch. We probably circle back around to that at some point. Wanted to say thanks for the comments as usual. And if you want to get in touch with us, it's at WTHcast on Twitter and whatthehexcast@gmail.com. So fellas, how are you doing tonight?
Doing pretty good.
What have you been doing in the hobby with respect to Warhammer Underworlds lately, Phil?
So I've been continuing to work on a deck that I want to do for Akon. I have decided that I'll just go with Magors. I can't figure enough out with the Iron Jaws to feel super confident with that choice. So we're going to go Magors, trying to sort of balance how aggressive to be with them. We've played a few test games where I basically have just been going, you know, full pedal to the metal from turn one and never let up. And sometimes it works great and I just absolutely blow things up. And then when it doesn't work, it really crashes and burns.
Right. We were stress testing today against Molag specifically, and they were holding.
Sounds stressful.
Yeah, I mean, it did come down to some pretty crucial, but I think it ended up 2-1 1 to Magors, but even the losses for Magors felt like they were absolutely in it for a big chunk. I don't know. Was that your take there, Phil?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. You know, in certain situations, it's like, oh, if the dice had been different, you know, here, there, it could have maybe changed the outcome. But at the same time, you know, that's like every game. So you kind of have to know that the dice are going to be a factor. And if you can't adjust for it, then that's probably a sign that you need to do something else. But
insert Aaron quip about dice here.
Everyone knows my opinion on dice. Right.
I have actually been thinking about that with this deck a lot, of where like it's just absolutely spinning the roulette wheel and being corn, probably putting everything on red all the time.
Yeah. Aaron, how about you? What you been up to?
Define hobby, I guess, in that I'm spending a fair bit of money like on the game, so that probably counts, right?
Totally.
But I've been scouring the internet trying to get my hands on different promos that I will never have opportunity to get. I'd like to think that's because I won't be at those tournaments to win them, and not that I couldn't win them if I showed up. But I did just get my hands on the Night Vault, a few Night Vault Grand Clash cards and tokens, so I'm pretty stoked. That's how I like to work my hobby into it. Plus, I've been buying some foam, like pre-cut from Feldherr, for the different warbands that I've been putting together, just so I have a place to put them, because my shelves are too full. I ain't got no room for these. I want the game to expand, but like I don't know where I'm going to put it all. So hopefully they slow down with some of these releases. Yeah. But beyond that, no, I haven't had a chance to play much or build many decks.
Tell me this, when you pick up some promos, is it a feeling of joy or just a feeling of relief?
I don't know the difference between those two. This is very much, what's her name from Netflix that everybody's talking about? Like
Marie
the things
Kondo.
That bring you joy. Yeah, exactly. They definitively bring me joy. So I mean, it's the best, and the best part of it, I've got them all tracked and documented. God forbid my house burns down, like I'll know exactly what I had and what I need to obtain.
Can you turn your entire hobby room into a fireproof vault that just will auto seal doors?
Actually, the exact opposite. Like, it's not even a legal bedroom. So if this place goes down with me in it, I'm probably in trouble. Davey, how quick can you get here?
Probably not quick enough. The basement fires are notoriously dangerous, so you probably got to write them off.
Don't tell my wife.
All right. Myself, I've been working a little bit, research for you, the loyal listener, working on Godsworn. And I tell you what, it's tough. Phil was talking about working on a deck. What was it you said, Phil? Like when you were trying to put one together and...
Oh, yeah. I like get halfway through doing the objectives and then I just get disheartened or like just freeze, I guess, because it's like, I don't know where to go from here.
Right. Got to try them out a little bit. We're going to cover that more on our Godsworn episode. God's help me. We're going down to a Rockford tournament. I'm going to bring them to that and just to get some more reps in with them and try them out. And I'm hoping that it doesn't do something crazy like inspire me to bring them to Adepticon, because that would, I can tell you right now, it's probably a bad choice, but we'll see. In other news, Claim the City is back. Enjoyed listening to their episode coming back. They had about a 2.5 month hiatus, but they're on it. They're monthly. If you have never listened to them, you should. And if you listened to them and thought they were gone for good, well, they're back. Check them out. Here's a sign that maybe not a lot of people are making Godsworn decks. I was on Underworld's DB, and I could not figure out why I kept thinking that Thedra's Path. I kept on mixing up Thedra's Path and Reaction Strike or something like that, and realized that there was a small error in Underworld's DB where they had the preview text for the two were duplicated. And so I apparently was the first one to notice that. I dropped that line to Underworld's DB's Twitter, and then within like a couple hours, it was fixed with this huge update. Now you don't have to cycle back and forth. If you haven't checked it out in a while, it's getting nicer and nicer to build decks on, and it was already pretty good. So I really like what he's doing over there. So shout out there. Kudos. But I think that about covers it. So let's get into the meat of this episode, or let's roll a dice on a shield or crit. We'll continue with the episode on anything else. We'll just call it no. Yeah. <right. laughs> So random ploys, and this feels a little bit timely because everyone's talking about rebound online. A lot of emojis and typing devoted to feelings on that one. Jamie Giblin over at Cataphrane Relic talked about his 5 cards that he thinks might be up and coming, and I think about 4 of them were ploys that were 50-50s, and we'll touch on some of those later. But first, like, a lot of people have a first reaction, like a gut instinct of whether they like or don't like to include these cards in their deck. Aaron, I think we already know your thoughts on that. Like, it's a dice roll. So,
but if you give me a second to expand on it.
Sure.
Boo.
Extra O's on the boo that time. How about you, Phil? What's your take on these? When you're in, again, we're talking about a card that's like forceful denial, which works on a shield or crit when you roll it. And on the other side of it, it's not doing anything.
So, on the whole, I don't like them a lot because when they don't work, I guess I should clarify that, like, if my plans were to need to revolve around these cards, I would be terrified all the time that they're not going to work.
Welcome to Godsworn.
But that being said, there are some of these that they're really just icing cards where it's like, I don't need this to work. My plans will still function without it. But if it happens to work, it's going to be awesome.
Sure.
And in those situations, I really like these cards. I think they can be a big wrench in your opponent's game plan. I think things like Last Chance are a great example of like, oh man, you hit this guy with dodge. You thought for sure, guaranteed kill. And then they pulled out Last Chance. And you're like, damn it. You got a 2/3 chance of not dying.
Right.
So I think overall, I think they're okay, but generally I don't include them very often.
Sure. And I would say back in the early days of Shadespire, when some of the first cards coming out for this were like Daylight Robbery, I was pretty averse as well. You know, it felt like this stark thing. And I think what gets a lot of people is there's a feel bad on it because it's right there in your face, like this card did nothing. Or on the other side, oh man, like that card only worked because he got lucky in it, and, you know, and the dice came up his way. But I read, and I wish I could credit the person, but I read this, it's probably a year ago at this point. We were maybe on the Ben Curry's forums that he put together. I haven't been there in a while, but
TGA.community?
Yeah, it's a TGA. Somebody there wrote, hey, you know, check this out. Like, when you make an attack, and again, odds on two hammers versus one shield or three swords versus one shield, they're a little bit better than 50%, like 54, 55%, somewhere in there. You're pretty close to a coin flip anyway. Well, we look at a card like Ready for Action, which a lot of people would consider to be maybe the best ploy out in the game right now. So if you use that for another action, you really, what you're doing is saying, on a coin flip, I'm going to affect the game, right? So, and you know, maybe a little more if what's important to you is just push somebody off an objective so that you can stand on it, then you're doing better than a coin flip. So to think about it in those terms, then it's just that it's delayed, right? Yeah. Oh, I'm getting that attack. And so it's not as starkly obvious whether it's impacted. And to take that further, if you take a card that people like pretty well, Haymaker, adding two dice, that adds roughly, it depends on exactly what's on defense and what's on offense, but you can say roughly somewhere from like 17 to 22% increase in your chance. So you play Haymaker, a card with, you know, perhaps a significant downside where you don't get to roll defense dice for the rest of the round. That's a card that's only, you know, less than one quarter of the time is it actually affecting the game. The rest of the time you would have hit anyway, or you would have missed anyway. So there's a small window. So thinking about it like that, I think kind of opens up maybe some deck space to say, okay, well, maybe I take another look at these cards. And so we're going to talk a little bit about how we evaluate those cards in a little bit here. So we kind of touched on how we feel about them. Let's get on with that evaluation, which we've already started here. So if you're talking about your odds of it, you're talking about what's the payoff. And Phil, I don't know if you can talk a little bit about this, like, you know, assessing, you know, if you compare to other cards, like what are you looking at for a payoff on these? You were bringing up Last Chance, for example. But there's other examples too.
Sure. So, and I guess maybe before I jump into some of the stats here, just a sort of maybe a psychological sort of step back to say, like, I think part of the reason, I know we gave our reasons, like how we feel about them, but I think maybe on a more general level about, we can speculate as to why people feel the way they do about them. I think in some ways we tend to compare the deck space that we have for regular ploys versus these, you know, I need to roll a die to have this work ploy. Mm-hmm. And we feel like I can only bring so many of these. And if we really think, oh, I need to, you know, keep it to 20 cards, I get 10 ploys. How many do I want to include in my deck that I know I won't get to benefit from if I don't make this roll?
Yeah.
And I think there's just this psychological element of like, well, I'd rather just take cards that I know what they're going to do. So mm-hmm. there's this predictability. But in terms of actually trying to figure out, you know, which of these, you know, what's the payoff you're looking for? I think it's usually situations like, you know, people love cards that it's just going to completely stop the damage that they're going to take. Mm-hmm. 'Cause there's not really any other way to stop an attack. You know, your opponent, like, you could theoretically play a ploy ahead of an attack and say, like, well, I'm going to increase my defense to try and have the same kind of effect. but it telegraphs exactly what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So your opponent may choose to just completely ignore that turn for an attack, which, you know, has its own value. But I think these reaction ploys where you can be like, oh, instead of me dying, maybe I come, you know, don't take any damage, or maybe I come back if I'm a Khorne person and I come up someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
I know they've got one like that. And I think those kinds of things are usually nice just because it saves a fighter. Two, it negates an attack from an opponent, which means that you've effectively eliminated a 12th of their activations. And if you didn't end up even needing it, you can still just hold on to it. You know, it's this sort of like insurance policy.
Right.
Which a lot of other ploys don't work that way. So I think defensively, most of them that we see are defensive.
Well, so when I'm looking at these, you know, I try to figure out like what are the cards that we know are powerful because they're on the restricted list. That's maybe, you know, there may be some flaws in that statement, but let's just take it for now. You say some of the most powerful cards are almost guaranteed damage, like Twist or Trap or Pit Trap. So you say, well, okay, a card, one ploy is worth about one damage, or one power card like Destiny Demeter, Slumbering Key is worth one glory. And, you know, some that are particularly powerful may get you more than that with more restrictions or something like that. But that's like a rough thing to judge by, or one card is worth one hex if you want to compare it to sidestep. But yeah, so let's cycle back around. So Aaron, how many, you ran the numbers on this, right? Like how many ploys are we talking about if we look across all the warbands in the game?
From the list that you came up with, I just threw them in there. So I think there's something about 27, maybe, give or take.
It's possible we missed a couple, and some of them are a little bit difficult to define where they totally fit this definition. But yeah, so 27. I think we got about 10, like Phil was saying, most of these are defensive. That kind of actually surprised me once they were all laid out. So almost a third of these random ploys are defensive in nature. And I guess maybe it's because offensively, you know, you are still affecting, like we talked about with Haymaker or something like that. They're almost like a random ploy in disguise. It's concealed in the next dice roll that you make rather than being on its own on a dice roll, right? So
yeah, well, and I guess that kind of plays into some of the psychology of the game too, right? I mean, we already accept that an attack is never guaranteed,
mm-hmm.
and we're kind of okay with that fact. It's like, well, I know I've got to roll for my attacks, but these other things that I'm doing, I don't have to roll for, so I just want them to work. I mean, I've never really thought about it before, but it is kind of interesting that we're okay with the offensive side of things being pretty random,
mm-hmm.
but we're okay with these other parts of the game not being random.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Right.
Or if you're Aaron, you're not okay with any part of the game being random.
I object.
Yeah.
Do you?
Well, to randomness, yeah. Of course.
Oh, okay. Sure.
There is a deck that Jamie Giblin put up on his blog. Oh, no, I take that back. Michael Carlin on Steel City Underworlds, he put up a post about winning some Shade Glass with Sepulchral Guard, and its central tenet was to not roll very many dice. So, Aaron, I'll forward you that link. You might
enjoy. My man.
So on these defensive ploys, Phil's brought up Last Chance a couple of times, and I think what makes that big is it's a tooth, you know, if you're assuming you're using it on a Dodge Warband who like it the best, it's going off 2/3 of the time. It is denying somebody right away out of the gate a glory. So you say even before anything else, that's 2/3 of a glory you'd say it's roughly worth, right? Denied to your opponent. But when you add onto that the fact that you still be able to use that fighter, that they've got somebody pulled out of the way, that you may have denied a cascading set of objectives, especially against someone like your Magors, right, that are saying, oh, if I kill this dude, I get 3 glory or something like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Deny him a chance at inspiring as well. You know, if that strike was going to be successful, now it's not. All of a sudden, they've got an unsuccessful attack, and they're did not inspire off of that. So there's a big list of benefits that come with that, and 2/3 chance is pretty good. So that is something that makes that card pretty high in value, and I think you see it in a number of dodge based decks. As a comparison, rebound much less likely to go off, but it has an even greater effect where you've got a counter offensive thing here. So especially with some of the big stack damage from Molag or Gurzag or someone like that, you can really shift the game massively with that one dice roll. And because it's so impactful, then you consider accepting the fact that it's only going to go off 1 in 3 times. Any of these other defensive ploys catch anyone's eye?
I mean, it's not always a big one, but I think Healing Potion is sort of an understated gem, just in the sense that it's like, yeah, it's random, but it's only random that it is better than it normally is. Like, it's always useful to be able to peel one wound token.
If you get two,
hey, it's even better. Especially on people like Molag, which I felt keenly in our games, where I was like, damn it, if I just had one more damage on him, he'd be dead.
Sure. So yeah. Like, when it makes a difference between needing one more attack or two more attacks, when you consider, again, like we're talking about, no attack is guaranteed to land, all of a sudden, like, okay, well, I need two successful attacks, but that might look like four actual, you know, swings in the game before I actually hit that many. Right. So that really can extend the runway for whoever is using that. For me, I thought an interesting point was On Your Feet's been in the game for a long time. It's a 50 needed shield or a crit. Somebody's got to be beside the person who is going down. So that feels pretty restrictive. But the reason I bring it up is because it specifically allows for saving against death by a ploy, and which made me go back and look at Dark Destiny and Rebound and Last Chance, which are specific to attacks, and it reminds me, okay, you know, if you take somebody out with Trap or Pit Trap or pushing them into Lethal Hex, then those cards don't have a chance to work. So that's certainly worth keeping in mind, basically.
That is an interesting point. I actually hadn't remembered that. And I think maybe partially because it doesn't come up that often, mm-hmm. but I could see that being a big deal in a tournament or something where you're like, no, I got you from that Lethal Hex. You mm-hmm. don't get to use that card.
Mm-hmm. Rebound's a little trickier because it doesn't. People often use it when they're about to die, but it's not necessarily only for lethal hits. It can be used on any kind of attack. It also gets you. Go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, just back to Healing Potion, and apparently there's a dwarf version of it too, I think.
Urgold.
Yeah, but so I guess more to Phil's point, like, are there other cards like that? I'm trying to run through the list to see if there's other ones where, like, you get a lesser effect if you don't roll the dice, because, like, that's something I'm okay with. Mm-hmm. Like, you're risking to get a little bit more, but, like, it's still not a wasted card. You're still doing something. So to that point, from my very negative attitude towards, you know, rolling dice, especially when it comes to these cards, that's it numbs the pain a little bit to, like, have to use something like that. So if they went down the path of using that mechanic a little bit more, I would be more on board with it.
Sure. I can't think of ploys where it comes up. It comes up in some spells like Racking Change or something like that, where there's some base level amount and then the dice can increase it beyond that.
And speaking of spells, that, as far as I'm concerned, this is the exact same thing, by the way.
Sure. Yeah. Basically, and that is something I think we'll do a spell episode later, but you're totally correct. Like, they are, for all intents and purposes, they might as well be random ploys, right? Mm-hmm. And we see plenty of those out there.
Right. Which, I mean, not to get too far off into spells, but I think it harkens back to the same psychological sort of effect as to why you don't see people stacking a lot of spells. Because it is, it's like you do that mental comparison and ploys just kind of win out, at least at a gut feel.
Sure.
Unless you do things that modify your spell casting dice, but again, we're getting off the thread.
So offensive, there's relatively few of these. I think I totaled up about seven, and four of them, maybe, four of them involve like a 50-50 to have a chance at an attack, usually as someone's dying, but not necessarily so. So we're talking about like momentary madness, 50-50 to get enemy fighter to attack another enemy fighter. Last lunge is as an orc is dying, 50-50 to get a full attack. So what feels weird about those, you're like, well, 50-50, and then I get an attack, and even that might miss. So really, we're talking about this is only about 25% chance to affect the game unless you have stacked a bunch of dice on this person who's doing it. This, and then this is actually a good time to bring back, like, where we talked about ready for action is basically giving you an attack that's a coin flip. Well, when we look at the value of a card, where if we say one card is worth about one damage, if we're looking at twist or something like that, well, an attack often is putting three or four out there. So if you say something like last lunge, which is a 50-50 to have an attack, and then that attack is about a 50% chance to hit, you're saying there's about a 25% chance to do four damage. Well, it comes out to, you know, roughly worth one. So yeah, maybe it's accurately costed. But again, it's the difference between having like a big possible payoff versus a small, more guaranteed payoff. And I think consistency is very attractive to players that are playing in a particularly competitive setting. And that's why you see a card which, you know, maybe by math looks like it's costed correctly, having a good time, much less popular than a card like Twist or Trap or something like that.
And I think to this point, I think they recognize how valuable having the attack is if you don't have to roll for it, because, you know, ready for action is restricted, whereas the rest of these are not.
Right.
And I mean, we know how strong it is. Ready for action is used all over the place. And I mean, there's other reasons for that because of the move as well. But it feels like in a certain way these are balanced the way they want them to be, because they don't want offense to be the driving force in the game. They continually seem to be pulling it back to try and have it be a more like back and forth fight rather than go blow somebody up, and then, you know, it's just this back and forth of everyone gets killed in one hit kind of thing.
Yeah, I think they're trying to find that. I mean, as we see Sudden Growth and Deathly Fortitude both popping out of the restricted list, they probably figure they swung too much in one direction, so pulling it back a little bit. But and also when we're talking about an attack, like an attack isn't just the damage it does, it's the figure it takes off, and it's all the objectives that you could score off of it, and there's plenty that, you know, strong start or advancing strike or whatever the case may be. So that one attack is potentially worth a whole lot beyond just what damage it causes right there.
Sure. Then there's even the positioning factor of, you know, using knockback or drive back.
Yeah. All right. Anybody got anything else they want to touch on with these offensive ones?
I think we kind of touched on this during the Malog episode, but, you know, so like Final Duty or Last Lunge, it's like, okay, so you get to do these when you die, but, you know, it's such a low chance of it even happening. And then there's other cards that do effectively the same thing, but it's, you know, it's not an attack, but it's guaranteed damage when you die, that it's kind of like, why would I even be bringing this card? There's just objectively better cards, and like Spore Burst, it's like, right.
Well,
Spore Burst is different.
That's an example of
roll a dice and it just hurts everybody.
I think it's just one. So Spore Burst, it has to be on Spite Shroom, it has to be an adjacent fighter, It's a 50-50, and then they take one damage. Yeah,
one damage, right?
So that's an example. If you're looking, like, everyone can read that card and gut instinct say, that does not seem worth it. You can math it out and see why, because it's 50-50, so it's like half a point of damage, and it's restricted in range and to a particular fighter, which are costs right. that are too high to make it useful. If it was everyone around it, or if it was more than one damage, then maybe you revisit it again, but the cost is just not very efficient. So that's an example of evaluating a cost and coming up with, like, okay, here's objectively why this is not very good.
Mm-hmm.
Again, any of these, if you're goofing off, or if you're trying to stack a lot of stuff in a particular deck, then perhaps you got something, but you'd have to dig really deep for a Spore Burst. Another category, and there's just a couple in this, was 50-50 ploys, random ploys that affected scoring. And there's just two in here that I noticed. There's Daylight Robbery and One Step Ahead. Daylight Robbery being a 50-50 to take an unspent glory from your enemy, and One Step Ahead being a 50-50 to... Well, first you have to correctly guess an objective that the person is going to score, and then it's a 50-50 that they don't get to score it.
One Step Ahead, which... it's kind of an evolution of the
anticipation
ploy. It's sort of a fun mind game, but I don't know how often you'd ever actually be able to know exactly what card your opponent's going to be trying to score. And then on top of having to figure that out, having to make the dice roll, like,
sure.
Are you trying to tell me that you've never, like, predicted, like, the opponent's, like, you've probably got supremacy in your hand,
like,
right now?
I've definitely been able to do that, but I don't know. The timing just makes it feel like the times you'd be able to easily are not the times you'd have the card, or maybe you wouldn't be able to roll the hammer or crit that you need, and it's just kind of like, oh, man, there's going to be some situations where you might be even... you knew they were going to score supremacy.
Sure.
Or I think, you know, the part of me that thinks that maybe these even have a little bit more worth now is with Godsworn, where it's like, I know you're going to do this because you said you were going to do it.
Oh, yeah.
And then still not getting the roll, it would just be like this huge letdown moment where you're just like, damn it.
Yeah, but again, I think you're thinking along those lines of, like, the feel bad, the 50-50. If we think about, like, the odds of affecting something, I think that there's we're starting to see some decks. I say this not having put this card in any but a particularly goofy Magor's deck, which we may talk about at a later date. there may be some play on this, maybe, you know, like with these tome decks that say. Acolyte of the Cataphranes, you know that's coming when somebody's sitting on five or six books. So if you have this card at the end,
right.
I mean, I'll take a 50-50 to deny somebody five or six glory. That's pretty juice. And same like Aaron talked about with Supremacy. The argument against this for stopping Supremacy is that you could probably also stop it with Distraction. Although if you're like Aaron, you probably have, you know, two or three sidestep clones sitting in your hand to make it happen.
Bring it on. Come at me.
Other ones that are good, like keep them guessing at this point. Nobody's ever guessing that you have, you know, like there's not a lot of mystery around, like, oh, you put a guy on guard in the middle of nowhere. And like, I guess I don't have to guess too many times to figure out what's going on here. So,
yeah.
I think it's interesting. I think there might be something in like I've talked in the past about glory starvation, I think is as powerful or more powerful than scoring your own glory sometimes. You know, we've all been in those games where we just couldn't get that first glory that we needed to get things rolling. You know, that if I can get a glory, then I can get this upgrade, which will help me get more. If you can find a way to starve somebody of glory, it's pretty powerful.
For sure.
We talk about, like, risking the feel bad moments. This is also like a category of card that I'm okay with, in that I'm more than willing to risk a feel bad moment on my end if I can inflict a pretty bad feel bad moment on my like my opponent. And that's what these two cards basically do. Like, it's I'm literally going to steal your glory, or I'm going to prevent you from scoring this thing that you were going to do, like, blatantly. Yeah. And so, like, I think that's why it fits a particular, like, design, and that, like, yes, I'm willing to roll the dice and risk feeling bad myself if it meant that I could really make you feel bad about, like, you know, the end result. So it's a little sneaky. It's a little vindictive. And so that's why I'm cool with it.
I wanted to have a special call out for Daylight Robbery, which I think is a pretty nicely designed card, because it is at its most effective early in the game, where me taking one of, if maybe your first glory, or, you know, one of your early glory and adding it to my pile, that's a huge swing. It's also most difficult to pull off early in the game, because that's when you're most likely to be spending your glory right away. I know when this card came out, there wasn't a lot of score immediately, and so it could be pretty hard to score, because usually what would happen, somebody would kill a fighter and then upgrade right away, and then there was no unspent glory. Here, when there are score immediately is getting that are landing on a charge or some such, then they're scoring two glory. They can't spend it fast enough to deny you a chance to use this card. So I think this may be perhaps more powerful than before. The problem is it does not necessarily contribute specifically to your plan, unless maybe with Godsworn. I've been eyeballing it, but
I like the idea of, like, somebody spending their glory just to, so they can deny you Daylight Robbery.
Yeah. Totally. Spending non-optimally. I think that is what it, I mean, I remember that happening. Mike Jordal, who had a ton of 50-50s in his deck at last year's Waupaca, he was definitely making me do that. Like, oh, earned one. I guess I'll put this defensive upgrade on prematurely because I want to hang on to this glory. Not just because I want to have this, but I want to have it at the end too. So, yeah, that's a really good point for that one. Our next category, I call these game state affecting ones, and there's somehow there's two that involve Stalag Squig. We already talked about Hobble and there the whole time. We're gonna skip those, but three big ones are Shatter Shard, Cruel Taunt, and Frozen in Time. Especially the third of those, Frozen in Time, has gotten a lot of look in with Molag.
Especially for warbands where you're sort of the, like, hyper leader dependent warbands, like dwarves or the orcs or Malog.
Yeah.
Like, shutting them down for an entire round, if you can get this off on the first activation kind of thing, is such a huge game changer that it probably means that your opponent, unless they were already really ahead, are now going to be struggling for the rest of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do this in the third round, it may be meant that you just straight up shut them out of the game entirely, and there's just nothing they can do.
Sure.
So while this is, I think, probably one of the stronger 50-50 cards, and probably worth using if you think it's, you know, if you're going to need that kind of shutdown in your matchups, it's probably worth taking. I think the one thing to consider with cards like this is that it really is, like, one of the most feel-bad cards in the game. Especially if, like, say you only had one fighter left and it was the third round of the game.
Yeah.
This could essentially mean that you just ended the game early. Sure. And that, I mean, nobody likes being in a game where they don't get to play.
Yeah, I get it.
Like, people talk about it in 40K and AOS a lot, where you sort of get the situations where you know your opponent's going to do some just crazy stuff, and it's going to take a while because they've got to roll, you know, 3,000 dice or whatever, and they're just going to make you pick up half your board and just take, you know, it's like, okay, you set all those up, now take them and put them back off the table, and there's nothing you can do about it. It's kind of getting that same psychological state. Now, I don't think that Frozen in Time is actually that problematic, but it, you know, you do have to think about it, especially in a friendly situation. Like, do you want your friends to know that, like, okay, he's bringing that out again, I might just not get to play this time. I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's also worth noting, though, if you, because we can expect to see this card more, it says you can't make any actions, so it's beyond, above and beyond activations. You can't even manipulate this guy with ready for action or something like that. But it does not prevent him from being pushed or swapped with confusion or something like that. So there, you can still play upgrades on this fighter. So there's, and obviously it can't take damage, but there's a number of other things you can do. Weirdly, it can be affected by Abyssos Withering. So,
oh yeah,
that's actually, if you had somebody with one health left, you could still kill him with Abyssos Withering. Some weird corner cases in there. But I feel like it's a card to understand back and forth. But yeah, right, I think you're dead on. Like it can be the King Feel Bad card. Less a big deal is Cruel Taunt, but still kind of handy. Like, there's particular models that really get crushed by being uninspired. One that springs to mind is Sour Tongue, the Fanatic, if he stops spinning.
Yeah.
pretty embarrassing time for him. Obviously, Molog drops off considerably in efficacy if his inspire condition goes away. And then I also think a lot of the Stormcast, that's a pretty big swing for them too. So conversely, nobody cares if Grawl gets uninspired. So
I think Fuel, not that I've seen many people playing dwarves lately, but if he were to get Cruel Taunted, that's a pretty big shift. Like,
sure,
lose a damage, lose cleave, lose a move, lose a wound.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. That's quite a shutdown.
So I think what we're covering is that these are both very powerful cards. I think what is difficult with them is that they don't necessarily, like, they're counter denial sort of things. They don't necessarily feed in directly to your plan in some way. Like if you're running Aaron style deck, we're trying to sit on objectives or position yourself in a particular way, they don't move your fighters at all. They just make the other side worse. And it makes it hard to include a card like that sometimes, because you don't look at it and say, this is exactly what it's going to do to help me score my objectives. Right.
Right. I think, and I think it is sort of, you know, maybe not great that this is where it would feel the strongest, but I think if you were to try and, you know, resurrect a Cataphrine Relics deck, mm-hmm. which I know it sounds like there are a few sort of floating out there with ghosts, yeah. and skeletons.
Yeah.
These cards are real great when you're just trying to hold your opponent at bay until you get all those put up.
Sure.
So just have a real heavy glory denial deck where you're just trying to put on relics. That would probably work, and everyone would probably hate you, but
they very much like tie into like a controlling style deck, like from other like card games. So I'd be interested to see them sort of flesh that like concept out, and not sort of just exclusively rely on, not that this is the case, but exclusively rely on, you know, those 50-50 type cards. But like, given that a control playstyle often is pretty powerful in other games, maybe it's necessary to keep it sort of held back.
Sure.
And limited with these 50-50 style cards, just to make sure that it's not particularly, not, whether or not it's oppressive or just leaving a bad taste in other people's mouths. Because if you hear anybody who loses to a control deck in other games, it often leaves a bad taste.
Pretty sour grapes. I'll build the Daylight Robbery One Step Ahead, Cruel Taunt, Frozen in Time, Shatter Shard deck, and see how long it takes opponents to come across the table and choke me. If I hit all the rolls, it's me.
I mean, I'd love it, because every dice roll you lost, I would just fall out of my seat cackling.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that. Or am I? TBD.
Adepticon, here it comes.
Yeah, look out. I'm going to take the bottom quarter of the bracket by storm. mobility is one that, and these were not 50-50, but there's Deceitful Step, with from the Zinch War Band. That's an interesting one where I don't remember which way it goes, but you're rolling that magic dice and it's a 50-50 that you go to a starting hex and 50-50 that you go to the to a objective token. That always feels like
there's
not
even.
Well, go ahead. You've used it a lot more than
I've used it a lot, and I really love the card. I think it's super strong. You get the lightning bolts, and then you can go to an objective hex. If you don't, you can go to a starting hex. Or no, it's the other way around. My God. I don't know how many times I've used this, and it is definitely the other way around.
Channel to a starting hex, otherwise objective.
Yeah. And both of those things are really good. So, like, rarely are you going to be upset about not getting one or the other. Now, maybe you had machinations for, like, hey, if I just, you know, use a ploy to go onto an objective hex, I can score supremacy. Well, great. But being able to just teleport a fighter anywhere on the board is also still really good. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't add a movement token, mm-hmm. which a lot of the other things that we have right now do. So, yeah, it's a real nice one.
Yeah. I remember that being particularly crushing when I was running the Reavers and on at the end of my power step, Kacharik would teleport into the middle of my warband. Like, oh my God, this is going to be awful. Yep. Then he could just enough speed just reach wherever because he didn't have a move token. So I was appear by somebody, kill them, and then charge somebody else. It's so great. But and then Flickering Step is the other one. We kind of mentioned this in our very first episode. I think I figured out on this, there's a 21% chance, something like that, 22%, that this does absolutely nothing. This is one where you roll 8 dice, and for every crit you get to move, get pushed a hex.
It's that high, 22%.
It is higher than you would think. You know, you feel like with that many, I'm not guaranteed a crit, but it is on the order of that, somewhere in the 20% range.
I actually used to have it in my Skaven deck, and yeah. JV, you even told me, like, Aaron, you do realize that, like, it's whatever, 22% chance that it literally does nothing. I'm like,
and you instantly broke out in a sweat.
Yeah. Oh, good point. This is before I realized how much I hated rolling dice. a while back. But yeah, no, it really took a second for me to, like, digest that what I was doing. There's, like, way better movement cards to accomplish what you're trying to do than them.
Yeah. The only nice thing about that is that you roll the dice first and then pick your fighter. So if you have somebody who's, you know, hey, one hex is good for him, two hexes is good for this one, you know, it's a dicey argument, but yeah, that's our thought on that. And then there's a couple of, we were talking about denial stuff before. There's Instinctive Denial, which is kind of a garbagey counter a spell card with too many restrictions. But there's Forceful Denial, which is counter a ploy on a 50-50. This one is interesting to me because it's as blank a slate as you can get. You know, there's obviously, if we're talking about other games like Magic, Counterspell, This is basically that works on a 50-50. So it can be, whenever I'm looking at whether I include this, I'm like, this is as powerful or as crappy as I can possibly imagine it being, right? Because it totally depends on what you use it on. I think I put it in that that Defensive Stormcast deck that I tried a couple times, and it would take a lot of practice to figure out how to use. Like, you have to know what it is that you are really fearing. But if you save it too long, then you've kind of wasted your time, right?
Right. I could see it where if you really know the meta and you really know, like, okay, maybe Malog or, you know, Magors or something, and you know that, like, the really strong cards like Ready for Action or something like that are going to be the things that are going to be the tipping point for a game potentially, mm-hmm. that's where you'd pull it out. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be much harder to know what to do if it's something like Ghosts or Sepulchral Guard or Gits. It's like,
yeah,
I don't know. You've probably got a lot of ploys that are useful, but no, like, hugely game-changing ones.
Yeah, I mean, I might include it in something in a if I was trying to do a hold objective deck, you know, that could just get obliterated by a bad drop if you had space. I mean, that's always the thing. I know this saw play in the relic decks at the end of the first run of Cataphrane relics, where they were worried about being shatter sharded, and worried about maybe even frozen in time. I can't remember but they would put Forceful Denial and Misdirection. Is that the send it away to someone else? So yep. But that was a case of knowing, hey, I specifically do not want to see this card go off. So they're going and they can narrow it down to there's just a couple of ploys that I'm really worried about. So that's I think where that pops up. And again, that is somebody finding a reason to include this, not because it's probably just generally useful. They can say, yeah, there is a specific reason I'm including this and it will help me execute the plan that I have. All right. Well, I think that wraps up our list of 27. I wanted to make a special mention when I began way back at the beginning of the first season, when we were thinking about these, there was ploys and upgrades that had 50-50s, and there was Soul Trap was kind of the early upgrade that worked on a 50-50. And what I thought was interesting about that is that unlike these ploys, which are sitting in your hand and you're saying, well, I've got this, I don't know if it's going to work. When you lay that upgrade out there, like Soul Trap, and we're not going to go through all the 50-50 upgrades, but what you're doing, you're putting that uncertainty on your opponent. Like, okay, you can commit in, but on a 50-50, your fighter's going to have charged and achieved nothing and now be vulnerable. And so it's the mind game. You know, we talked about the psychological idea of like the, oh man, it's going to suck if this card doesn't go off. When it's sitting in your hand, you're the one staring at that the whole time and being like, oh, okay, on a 50-50, this is going to be great. When you put it out on the table, I feel like it puts some of that onus on your opponent, who then has to be thinking like, they're wrestling with the upsides and downsides. So I thought that was an interesting way to think about it. And then you approach some of that when someone gets more familiar with your deck. Like if you've played Last Chance a bunch of times and they're in the back of their head, they're saying, oh man, I might go in and just get last chanced, you know? So.
Yeah. Yeah. I think interestingly, so both of these are restricted, Soul Trap and Tethered Spirit, and yet they kind of do the same thing as a lot of these ploys. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about it now. I wonder if the reason these are so strong as upgrades is because most other upgrades aren't as impactful on the game. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, well, yeah, of course I'm going to include these. Even though they're 50-50, mm-hmm. it's such a big deal if my fighter survives and I've got room in my upgrades. Like, I don't know. It's like I've got great strength and I've got great fortitude and I've got, you know, what I need. Mm-hmm. I need five more. Mm-hmm. What am I going to throw in here?
Yeah. Yeah, and I wonder if they don't start to get another look in now that both Sudden Growth and Deathly Fortitude are on the list. But that's kind of spiraling off onto a different topic here. So that's it. That's our take on random ploys. Mostly just an idea of giving you another reason to go take a look at them, above and beyond the idea that, oh, I need to bring something to beat Molag. You know, it's just kind of an idea on how to look at and evaluate these for inclusion.
Wait, is that what we were doing? Because my whole point is don't use them.
Sure. Well, your evaluation criteria are substantially different, substantially more correct, I'm sure you'd say. But
same thing.
Yeah.
Six and one, half a dozen the other.
So we will be back in a couple weeks' time. We are going to be bringing you some coverage of hopefully the Godsworn Hunt, where I sing you tales of my glorious victories. We'll see how that goes. But at the very least, some thoughts on building decks with them, gameplay with them. It won't be comprehensive, but we'll have had a healthy number of games at that point. And then we'd also like to cover deck size, like deciding not only, you know, why is it that everybody says, hey, 20 cards is the way to go, or 22 or 24, but what happens when you include cards that draw extra ones? Like what's the math behind that? The idea is if we can get him, we're going to bring in Steven Van from Call It Shadespire, and his mad math skills are coming in. So mad math beyond the Thunderdome. And, that's it. Anybody got anything else they want to throw out here?
Rebound is not that big a deal. calm down, internet.
At him.
Yeah, I don't endorse that statement.
You don't care about Rebound. You're not swinging on people anyway.
Nope.
Yeah. We've been What the Hex. You can get in touch with us at WTHcast on Twitter and whatthehexcast@gmail.com. Obviously, we're part of the Bigger Mortal Realms team. You can get in touch with us or take a look at the rest of the things we produce on our website. Aaron, throw us that website.
Obviously, it's themortalrealms.com.
Yeah. Are you riffing on my obviously?
Obviously.
I'll cut that out and just make it look like you're coming free with an obvious.
No, don't. Everybody loves it.
All the power. Yeah. Anyway, for What the Hex Cast, I've been Davey.
This is Phil.
And this is Aaron. But not that you need me, because obviously you don't. It's actually pretty tricky to try and edit me on a different, like on the other podcast. Famous last words. That's what I say every episode. Gotcha.